They're fierce. They're unapologetic. They're revolutionary. From the rainforests of Malaysia to the streets of Congo, meet the barrier-breaking women seldom grabbing headlines yet courageously transforming our world. The Revolutionary Circle podcast cracks open the minds of those defying the status quo and rewriting the rules. Dive deep as the hosts explore adversity, unearth hidden truths, and capture the resilience of the feminine spirit with changemakers turning dreams into revolutions. Together, a raw and real journey awaits. Join our global sisterhood as we get real about the mindset, challenges, and lessons learned from fierce, unapologetic women who are revolutionizing life on their own terms.
Hello, amazing humans. It's Mona here, and I am absolutely delighted to be introducing you today to Jem Pohlman. Jem is an empowering spirit who, at the age of 19, found herself yearning for a life manual, unaware of the fascinating journey that lay ahead. Jem's life has been marked by a series of challenges, like so many of our lives, navigating through anxiety, depression, and divorce, and a profound personal and business loss during the 2008 global financial crisis. This loss left her and her family of five homeless and residing in tents in the National Forest. However, Jem emerged from these trials with remarkable resilience. And in true Jem fashion, during the pandemic, no less, Jem authored her incredible book, Be Unmissable, which went on to become a bestseller. It's a profound life manual chronicling her life's journey and offers invaluable insights gained from her school of hard knocks wisdom. Jem's passions embody learning, connecting, exploring, and laughing. She's a testament to her impactful and inspiring journey through life's challenges. Today, Jem serves as an unmissable mindset mentor for women who are ready to make significant changes in their lives. She's an accomplished entrepreneur, one of the incredible co-hosts of the Revolutionary Circle podcast, mum to three amazing humans, and trust me, they're amazing. Jem shares her life with her talented business partner and husband, splitting their time between Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Austin, Texas. It is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Jem Pohlman.
Wow, I love the introduction about Jem. Resilience is one of the great qualities that I can see in you. Can you bring us back to the time that you were homeless? How you navigate through that challenging time together with your family?
Yeah, that's a good one, Joyce. Not very well at first. Not very well. I was really scared, and I was stuck in fight or flight for a good while. My brain was really hijacked with shame about the situation. But resilience is the ability to bounce back and recover after a setback. And I leaned really heavily on my spiritual life. I stayed connected to God through prayer and journaling and intuitive listening, which made me feel really connected to something bigger than myself. And our family had also a practice of doing something that we called gratefuls. So we would take turns. Usually we'd say, you know, okay, everybody has to do three gratefuls. And you had to come up with three things that you were grateful for. And it definitely helped us to focus on, well, what we were grateful for, but to take our minds off of what the problem was at the time and what the challenge was. And we had a vision prior to ever losing anything. You know, we had the vision of what we were trying to accomplish in our lives. So we knew that what we were going through was temporary, and we were still working towards what we had been working towards all along. So we had always wanted financial independence, and we had wanted multiple sources of income, and we wanted to love our kids and raise them to be productive adults. And we wanted to live in a nice neighborhood and where they could have a good education. So all of those things were still something that we wanted to work towards. And we didn't forget that that was really the vision that we had for ourselves. So before we left Illinois, before we ever actually lost the house, we had been putting together a plan of where did we want to go if we had to start over. And one of the things that we had come up with was that we wanted to live where there were good schools. So in our planning for what seemed like the end, you know, losing the house and all the stuff, we had put together a spreadsheet of what was important to us in where we lived. And, you know, some of the things were as simple as we wanted it to be sunny because Illinois is really gray and dull. And we wanted to make sure that we were near good schools and that we had a choice of schools, because in the United States, a lot of times, wherever you live, you have to go to the public school that is within that district. And so you can't go other places. So we wanted to make sure that wherever we were had the things that we like to be around. And even though we didn't have the money at the time, we wanted to be by cultural things. We wanted to be by great restaurants and all these different things. So we had kind of mapped out what we wanted before we embarked on the homeless part of our journey. And, you know, that brought us to Northern Arizona, actually, because we knew that we could camp there for free. And all we had to do was move campsites every 14 days to remain in the national forest. And it was near Flagstaff, Arizona, which was a place that had charter schools. So no matter where you lived, you could drive your child to that school and attend as long as you could get in. So part of the plan was to get on the waiting list for this charter school and get the kids on the list even while we were living in the forest. So, and all of that to say, the resilience of bouncing back after the loss was really keeping the vision in our heads of what we really wanted and still moving towards that. You know, not that we were great at it at the time, but we had our foundation that we had started. And I guess for anyone listening, if you're going to be resilient when things go awry, like, you need to start now. You need to know what you want now. You need to have that plan in place, put your foundation in place of how do you handle things when things go awry? You know, how do you get your brain into a good place that's creative and able to think of possibilities so that when things do go wrong, you have a plan in place?
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for your vulnerability as well to share a story for us and everyone that listening.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Joyce.
If I could ask the next question, following up from Joyce, in chapter 4, you said being unmessable is about who you choose to be in the face of stressful circumstances. And you know how it is that when you're in the midst of going through a stressful or a tough time, it can be difficult to see beyond what you're going through, to be able to even start choosing to react differently. What maybe like the top three things that they can start doing?
First, I'd like to address the word unmessable, because it's not a word that's used very much in our everyday language. And, you know, yes, it's in the book, I say it's who you choose to be in the face of stressful circumstances. In the Urban Dictionary, the definition is the quality of being able to stand in the face of circumstances, any circumstances, and not be thrown off course. It's someone who generates possibilities with anyone at any time under any circumstance. So I want to say something about that. People realize that being unmessable, it does not mean that someone is perfect, not by any stretch. It's that you are able to come up with possibilities when it seems like there are none. That's really what it's about. So yeah, when you're in a stressful situation, it's really hard to see other possibilities. And the reason why it's hard is because our brains get hijacked. And the part of the brain called the amygdala, it releases chemicals like stress chemicals, adrenaline and cortisol. And then the executive part of the brain no longer functions as creatively as it did before it got hijacked. So given that, what I would suggest to somebody who wants to be able to come up with new possibilities in a stressful situation is two part. First, before you're ever getting to that stressful situation, you need to practice and learn how to be self-aware. You need to be able to pause in your daily life and become an observer of what's going on in your own head. And that is a practice to learn that. You know, when I say an observer, it's like you're noticing what are the questions that you're asking yourself? What are you saying to yourself in that chattery conversation in your head that nobody else can hear. What meanings are you placing on other people's behavior or on situations? What beliefs do you have about what's going on around you? And this self-awareness is going to help you to understand why you get triggered in the first place. And then it's also going to help you to figure out what changes that you need to make in how you currently operate the brain that you have. It's like you're operating your brain in a certain way, but once you become self-aware, you realize what changes you need to make in how you operate your brain and that are going to make the most difference for you. And then the second part would be coming up with a way for you to calm your nervous system for when you do get hijacked. Because as it gets hijacked, it's like you see red. You just can't, you can't discern what's really going on in a way that makes a lot of sense. You know, when you get really angry sometimes and it's like you can't even remember what your husband just said to you because you're so mad and your brain just gets hijacked. You need to be able to come down in a stressful situation and calm your nervous system. So you need to know how to do that for you, what works best for you, because what works for me might not work for you. And you want to be able to come up with something ahead of time that enables you to bring your adrenaline back down and your cortisol back down. And that way, the executive part of your brain starts thinking again creatively and can come up with a new possibility. So one of the things that I know of to quickly bring your brain back to that creative state is connection and gratitude. And connection can be with another person, like when you're public speaking and you find that one person in the audience who will look at you and you're like, oh, I can connect with them. And it can actually help your brain calm down. Or you can do the gratefuls that I was talking about. There's actually been scientific studies that show that when you actually feel true gratitude, that it will lower the cortisol and adrenaline in your body, and it will bring you to a much more creative space, you know. And gratitude could be, you know, it could be all sorts of things. You can think about, you know, the people that you love in your life, and you're grateful maybe for your children or friendships that you have. But it can also be something just simple like, oh, I'm just so grateful the sun is out today and it just feels warm. And it just brings you, you know, one of those physiological sighs where you're like, oh, yes, that just feels good. And then it brings down those chemicals in your brain. So I would say the two things, you know, you said two or three, I'm just going to go with two. Practicing being self-aware and then having a regular practice of gratitude would be the first two things that I would suggest. And there's many things, you know, that I wrote about in the book. There's seven guideposts to being unmessable. But those would be the first two that I would use to get myself into a place if I was facing something stressful. That would be what I would first go to.
Just noticing how often we have a choice about how we feel or see or think about what's happening around us. You know, we've talked about this many times in our space, the different ways that we can do the dishes. You know, I'm so grateful that I have dishes to be washing. I have people to feed. I have food. I have dishes, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I'm doing this mindless chore. I mean, I'm not saying that we all live in some fantasy world where we're happily doing the dishes all the time. And I know that that's not what Karen means when she's talking about being unmessable, right? But the ability in that moment to make a different choice if you want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I want to pick out one of the part that you mentioned in the question to Shuhada just now. We want to practice to learn to pause. This is such an important skill. Hitting the pause button is also inside your book in one of the chapters. I love it so much. Like we are taking a step back, hitting the pause button, and then we create that silence moment or the space. Can you share more with us, like how this is, why it is so important, how it helped you to become more unmessable?
That's a great question. why is it so important? It is so important because we have to have that self-awareness. You know, we've got to be able to take a pause, because in everyday life, it's like you're so often just do, and you're going from one thing to the next, and you're, let's say you have children and you're getting the kids ready for school, and then you're getting them off to school, and then you're going to work, or, you know, running a business, whatever you're doing, going to the store, and we just get on this automatic way of being. And we need to pause. We need to be able to stop and be. It's so important that we live and choose a different paradigm. So rather than doing, so that we can have something, so that we can be something, we need to flip the paradigm into, how do we want to show up? Who do we want to be? Because then when you choose to be, you move to the next spot, which is, if I am going to be joyful, then I will have all of these different things in my life, and then I can do things about that. It's flipping it up, either be, do, have, or be, have, do. But put the be first, because when you're choosing who you want to be, you're taking that pause button and you're allowing yourself to make a conscious choice of how you want to show up, giving you new possibilities.
Yeah. This is an important and profound skill that we can have in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is such an important and profound skill. And I think, like, I really want to underscore it for folks listening, because it sounds so simple and it's not, meaning it, like, it is simple.
Right.
And it really, like Jen was saying earlier, it takes practice. Yeah, thinking about my life, I'll do it before I go into my kid's bedroom, for example. That moment of standing outside the door and becoming consciously aware of how I am and then who I want to be when I open the door, mm-hmm. rather than opening the door on autopilot, taking everything that might have just happened 2 seconds before into that room, into that conversation. You know, it can just be as simple as a moment of going, okay, how do I want the next few minutes to unfold? And then having that consciousness around it just opens up so many other choices, right?
Absolutely. And it's got so much to do with, what do you really want? Because if you don't know what you want and you're just going through life kind of on autopilot with unconscious, you know, destination in your head, you're probably going to wind up feeling stuck at some point, because you're not going to wind up where you really want to be. So you need to bring it back to, just like you said, when you're opening the door to your child's room, what kind of a mom do I want to be? What, you know, what is this that I'm doing with my children? Am I choosing to be, you know, a parent that is not really thinking about things and not really taking into consideration what you need to do for that situation? Or do you want to really, you're raising an adult and you want to make sure that you show up in a way so that you can really pour into their life and be present for them, so that they wind up feeling cared for and loved and they can show up for their children one day. So it's so funny how the ripple effect happens when you make just one different choice of how you decide to show up in life.
And just one small follow-up there, because I can't help but hear full circle back to what you were saying about being in the tents in the forest. Like, you know, we can choose how we want to show up, whether we're showing up in a tent or a 50-room mansion.
Right.
We have the same choice fundamentally, actually, about who we're going to be, right?
Yeah. And all of us, it's not just a portion of the population. We all have that choice. We all have that choice of who we want to be in this one short life that we have. And how do you want to show up in it? What do you really want to accomplish? What do you want to do? And who do you need to be in order to really do that the way you would envision doing it?
When I was reading parts of your book, you mentioned something about intuition. I love intuition, and that's how I live my daily life, from that space. But I want to talk about it in the context of your book. What kind of experience you had?
Intuition is so important. And I love that question, Shahada. I have something to say about intuition also, because you hear people talking about that they had a gut feeling or like an internal knowing or something. They feel like they're talking to maybe their higher power or God or, you know, the divine source. You hear lots of descriptions. People are talking about the same thing. I believe all those descriptions are describing our intuition. For me, so I'm Christian. So for me, it's my relationship with God, and I would call it Holy Spirit, but I get what our nudges or promptings or I will actually hear audibly things in my head. And I think that it is all of our intuition. So when we were homeless, and this is, we're talking 2008 after the global financial crisis, we moved out into the National Forest. We're with our kids. You know, I've got my husband, our dog, our three kids. We're in two tents out in the National Forest. And I was doing a lot of journaling and praying, and I started to audibly hear, write the book. And I was like, write the book. Okay, that's an interesting one. And at the time, I had just come from, you know, where we lived in Illinois, and I had been involved heavily in a ministry there of like support group for women and stuff. And initially I would say, I thought the book was really for these women or for, you know, something along the lines of what I had been involved in. And so I did a lot of journaling and a lot of listening, intuitive listening. I heard promptings and things for me to pay attention to. Like I would notice that I was noticing, and I would write it down. And then I would notice that my perspective of what was going on in the forest was vastly different than my children's perspective. And I would jot that down. And I would notice that the conversations that were going on in my head that involved me feeling feelings of shame. And I would notice and I would write it down. And all of these nudges got me to write the book that I ended up releasing in 2021. And what's really funny is it was 2020 when I was in the group with Morna, and we were in an entrepreneurial group. And at the beginning of the year, it was actually just before 2020, it was like November of 2019. And Morna was like, okay, you know, you got to come up with something that you're going to do, that you're going to commit to this year. And again, I heard, write the book. All right, write the book. Okay, I will write this book. And so I said to her, I'm going to write a book. And she's like, yeah, I'm excited for you. You're going to write this book. And I spent 2020 writing the book. And then, you know, in May of 21, ended up releasing it, self-published it, released it on Amazon, and it went number one as a new release. And I would say, you know, I actually have a source of income from it now, which is great. But I would say that it helped develop a really strong connection for me with my intuition. And I would say that developing for anyone a strong connection and relationship with your intuition, no matter what you decide to name it, is important. It is something I've taught our kids. My husband and I always taught our kids to listen to your gut, listen to that internal knowing, listen to what it's saying to you, and learn how to follow it, because it's there to guide you and to help you in your life.
Yeah, actually, when Jem, you answered the question from Shahada, actually, I have one follow-up question. What if the intuition that you hear, the voice inside you, is totally not making sense? How you navigate through that, you know, do you still follow the intuition? Because if you use your brain to analyze anything, it doesn't make sense at all. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hear from my gut feeling, you know, telling me heading to this way. It's like totally doesn't make sense how we should go through this. Can you share with us?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I think it's a practice of learning, really developing a relationship with your intuition, like it's a person, because I know for me in my spiritual life, when I first started really relating to that voice, I felt exactly like you're saying. I felt like, how do I know that that's really what it's telling me to do, you know? And how do I know if I should follow it? And it's really about testing it. So you would listen, you would, you know, do some intuitive listening and hear, maybe ask just a single question first and then hear what that answer is. And then dip your toe in the water and say, okay, I'm going to follow what it says and see what happens and start testing in small bites, so to speak. Okay, I listened to what it said and I did this. And what was the outcome? And kind of track it, because then you get to develop an understanding of, is it pushing you or nudging you or aiming you in a direction that is actually, maybe it's difficult at first or uncomfortable, but, you know, as an overall, is it pushing you in the right direction? Is it putting you in a place where you are more or less aligned with the vision that you have for yourself in your life?
Please like, comment, and subscribe to join the movement. Let us know what conversations you want to hear that could spark positive action. Small daily acts of courage can transform the world when women come together. We all have light within us. How will you let yours shine? The revolution starts now with your voice.